Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, in the aftermath of the numerous terror attacks in Paris, Beirut, the Sinai Peninsula, Baghdad, and elsewhere, for which ISIS has claimed responsibility, we look at how hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees could be affected. Plus, drink up, the new research highlighting some major health benefits for coffee drinkers. And as people across the U.S. prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, we'll explore some ways you can make it a sustainable holiday. Hello and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Noah Levitt.
And I'm Amy Montemiro. We begin with the aftermath of recent ISIS terror attacks.
Amy, hundreds of people have been killed in the recent attacks, which included the bombing of a Russian airliner, a suicide bombing in Beirut, and last week's attack in Paris. And as the investigation into the attacks continues, the ripple effects are being felt around the world.
That includes the hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees who have been forced to flee that country's brutal war. Here in the U.S., President Obama has pledged to take in 10,000 refugees this year. But the U.S. House recently voted to limit the admission of Syrian and Iraqi refugees. President Obama has threatened to veto the legislation, but it did pass with the support of dozens of Democrats.
We spoke to Jacqueline Baba, professor at the Harvard Chan School's FXB Center for Health and Human Rights, about the refugee crisis and the current political climate. Baba says that thousands of refugees a day are still trying to enter Europe, and that many are facing harsher conditions as they try to escape Syria.
There's extraordinary shortages now of food, of access to healthcare, very large percentages of children not in school. So the kind of picture is really very bleak, and that to some extent explains why so many people continue to leave. Here they are caught between a completely untenable situation back home where cities are destroyed, communities are destroyed, there's hot warfare on a daily basis. Already, I think 250,000 Syrians have died in this conflict. Conditions are really unlivable now. There's outbreak of cholera, outbreak of polio, and then here they are confronting a situation where they are suspect and where they are labeled as being part of exactly the kind of devil that they are fleeing. In a broader perspective, of course, what's most urgent is the imperative of addressing the conflict and trying to reach some sort of diplomatic peace so that just the loss of life and the extraordinary intense traumatization of the population stops.
Baba says it will typically take about 2 years for a refugee to be resettled after they flee the country. She also notes that the 10,000 refugees who may come to the United States are a fraction of a percent of the total number of refugees who are leaving the Middle East.
Also in the news this week, smoking continues to decline among U.S. adults. New data from the CDC's National Health Interview Survey shows that 14.9% of adults now smoke. That's the lowest percentage of smokers since the survey began in 1997. At that time, a quarter of U.S. adults were smoking. And while those numbers are encouraging, the CDC director, Tom Frieden, tells CNN that smoking is still the leading cause of preventable death in the U.S. About 40 million adults still smoke, and half could die prematurely if they continue.
This week, scientists are warning that we could be on the verge of a post-antibiotic era in which bacterial infections may become resistant to existing drugs. According to the BBC, a study published in The Lancet identified a bacteria that was able to resist a so-called drug of last resort in patients and livestock in China. Researchers say that resistance likely emerged after the drug, called colistin, was overused in farm animals. Scientists say the implications of this study are enormous. If we do enter this post-antibiotic era, experts tell the BBC that common infections could be increasingly dangerous, while surgery and cancer therapies that rely on antibiotics might become less effective. In response to this study, Chinese officials are now considering whether colistin should be banned from agricultural use. It's the great caffeine debate. Tea or coffee? So, Amy, where do your allegiances lie?
I am not sure I can pick one over the other. I typically have a cup of coffee to really come alive in the mornings and then tea throughout the rest of the day. And how about you?
pretty reliable one cup of coffee in the morning, maybe the occasional cup in the afternoon, throw in some tea every so often, but I think I'm largely a coffee guy.
Well, Noah, tea has plenty of health benefits. However, new research is highlighting some major health benefits associated with coffee.
That's right, Amy. Researchers at the Harvard Chan School found that moderate coffee consumption, defined as 3 to 5 cups a day, well more than my one cup a day, may reduce your risk of a premature death. That's because coffee consumption was associated with a reduced risk of death from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, neurological diseases such as Parkinson's disease, and suicide.
And researchers analyzed data for more than 200,000 participants in 3 large ongoing studies, and coffee drinking was assessed over a period of 30 years. In order to try and isolate the effect of coffee, scientists took into consideration factors such as smoking, body mass index, physical activity, alcohol consumption, and other dietary factors.
Now, if this wasn't all enough good news for you, there's one last bit of good news from the study. You can reap the benefits of coffee even if you drink decaf. So right now, all the coffee drinkers win. Finally, this episode, people across the United States are preparing to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Noah, right now you may be conjuring up images of a large turkey, or our vegetarian listeners may be thinking tofurkey, as well as stuffing and pies, and the list goes on and on. And it might be hard to have a truly healthy Thanksgiving, but can you have a holiday that's more sustainable and good for the environment?
Well, Amy, I discussed that with Gary Adamkiewicz, assistant professor of environmental health and exposure disparities at the Harvard Chan School. And so the first question you might have is, how can we be sustainable on a day that's dedicated to indulgence?
I think we should put the day in context. I don't want to demonize a day that focuses on family and celebration. But I think because it is a day of indulgence, it's a good day to think about these broader issues. But we shouldn't focus on one day and ignore what happens on the other 364 days a year.
What does it mean when we say eat or shop sustainably?
It's about taking a close look at the way we grow, transport, process food. How do these things affect our local environments, the global environment? Probably the biggest sustainability issue we face is climate change, but there are lots of other issues to think about. Water scarcity and quality, air pollution, biodiversity, soil quality, and you could really fold in a lot of other big issues. Animal welfare, ethics, fair trade, all can be considered in your personal plan or an institution's plan for providing and eating sustainably.
I'm thinking of the context of Thanksgiving, and I think for most people, vegetarians aside, I mean, most people think of the turkey as kind of the centerpiece of the Thanksgiving meal. I mean, is buying a turkey sustainable?
I think a lot of people, when they raise the issue of sustainability, they frequently go straight to the issue of food miles and how do we eat locally. I think eating locally can be important, especially when you get to know your suppliers who are doing the right thing. But we shouldn't focus just on food miles, and the turkey does raise an important issue. So to give you a sense of the environmental footprint or carbon footprint of livestock, or turkey in particular, so a 2011 analysis by the Environmental Working Group showed that the carbon footprint of a pound of turkey is approximately equivalent to 10.9 pounds of equivalent CO2. So what does that mean? So on a per pound basis, that's about 58% higher than chicken, but 60% less than beef. So it's kind of in the middle there. And if you put this in context with other things we do, that means that for every 10 pounds of turkey that we consume, that's approximately equivalent to driving a typical car 120 miles. So I think it's useful to think about all the decisions you're making on a daily basis and put food decisions alongside other things. So just to give you a rough sense.
So let's kind of move to other parts of the menu, thinking sides, vegetables. What can people do there to maybe make some more sustainable choices at the rest of the Thanksgiving table?
One is that you should really think about in-season produce that doesn't require a lot of energy inputs, such as heated greenhouses or cold storage. Where you live is a big factor here. So certainly if you're in California, you have a lot more options. But even the for those of us who live in the Northeast, the good news is that many traditional Thanksgiving foods are in season, accessible. You can get local and fresh cranberries at this time of year in New England. If you go to, you could actually get winter squash, potatoes, turnips, beets, carrots, onions, celery root. Those are all fresh at this time of year. It's a good idea to try to cook from scratch. This is certainly a practice that people embrace at Thanksgiving. Heavily processed foods carry more embodied energy. Some family recipes have their origins in scratch cooking from healthy ingredients, but frankly, others were developed in the age of processed and packaged foods. So take another look at some of those recipes. They may be ready for re-engineering. The other thing you can do is you can try to remove some of the chemical exposures in your food and think about going organic. There's some cost premium here, but if cost is an issue, there are ways to make informed choices. The Environmental Working Group, for example, publishes every year a shopper's guide to pesticides and produce, which you can find online. It's also an app. And if you're trying to manage your organic produce budget, their tools can help you pick some good choices. The other big thing we shouldn't lose sight of is food waste. So that's another challenge at Thanksgiving. We all want to have a lot of dishes on the table. A lot of people do potluck. And so you end up with a table full of abundance, but we want to make sure that that isn't wasted. As much as 40% of the U.S. food supply is wasted, big holiday dinners can sometimes frequently yield wasted food on your own plate, certainly in the days that follow. So try to plan carefully. Don't grumble over the turkey sandwiches if you've chosen to eat turkey, and try to find new ways to make the most of your leftovers. That's a real problem that we really need to focus on personally and as a society in the years to come.
You know, you started kind of putting this in the big picture, so to speak, where, you know, use Thanksgiving as a starting point. But I think the takeaway really should be that the steps you might be using at Thanksgiving are things you can work into your meals and your shopping every day throughout the year.
Let's put diet in context with everything else we do on a daily basis, everything else we do throughout the year. In a way, if you think about the carbon footprint of Thanksgiving, probably the biggest footprint of the holiday is in our holiday-related travel. I'm not suggesting we all stay home, but once again, it's a way to put all this in context. You know, I think according to AAA, 47 million Americans will travel at least 50 miles from home. That's part of the holiday, but every day we're making decisions about how we heat our homes, what cars we drive, what travel we engage in, what products we're buying. And so if we're thinking about energy, we're thinking about the environment, let's put it all together in our decision making. I think it's a great exercise to ask these questions. We don't want this to be a stressful day, but it's a great place to start. So think about how you can make holiday meals more sustainable. Don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Start somewhere. So start with a side dish or two. Try substituting ingredients. If you're accustomed to canned ingredients, try a switch to fresh, local fresh ingredients. Get to know your local farmers markets. Get to know local suppliers. In some cases, trying to make these better decisions, there'll be a cost premium, but in a lot of cases, not. It's good to start this conversation in the big picture, but we should end it on the big picture. You know, Thanksgiving is about culture, tradition, sharing experiences with family and friends. I think everyone needs to relax, enjoy yourself, be grateful, and just start somewhere.
That was Gary Adamkiewicz talking about sustainability around Thanksgiving. And like Gary said, you know, don't stress, maybe a side dish here or there, and then make sure you're enjoying the holiday, spending some time with family.
Good advice all around. That's all for this edition of Harvard Chan This Week in Health, a production of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. I'm Amy Montemiro.
And I'm Noah Levitt. And you can listen to this podcast anytime and stay up to date on the latest health news by visiting our website, hsph.harvard.edu. You can also find this podcast on iTunes U, just search for Harvard University, or find it on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Harvard Public Health.